Cat Stevens, more latterly known as Yusuf Islam, is coming to South Africa for the Peace Train Tour, and he's doing a concert on Thursday, the 9th of November at Grand West. Ticket sales start on the 27th, on Thursday at 9 o'clock. Tickets go on sale. I spoke to him last week and said, you know what? I was 12 years old when the single and the album, Matthew and Son, were released. And I can go 2-3 years without hearing the song being played. The minute I hear it, I recall every single word of every line of every lyric of that song. And put it to him that it's incredible that 50 years later, that kind of song can still have so much impact on somebody like me.
It's very interesting because that song, I listened recently to, well, not that recently, but a song called Mad World. If you listen to that song, and if you play Matthew and Son, the middle of Matthew and Son, you might find a little resemblance in there. That's a little, it's a song which actually, when I wrote it, it was to do with, it's a social message, you know, it's to do with, you know, those big bosses, you know, who seem to control so much of the world, and the people who have to work, you know, very hard to earn their living. So it had a very good social message as well, I think.
And it's interesting that, to me, that social message is there and is still there. The most recent song that I know of yours was He Was Alone, highlighting the plight of refugees in Europe. So it seems to me that you were socially conscious from an extremely early age and wanting to express that through your music.
It could have been because I was born, well, before you, but it was just after the war. And perhaps there was all this, you know, all the visions of, you know, the war which had just happened and the 60 million people who had been killed. And so it was a feeling, I think, generally that, you know, we've got to get this world to a better place. And that must have influenced me, as well as maybe my, you know, my Christian upbringing. And, you know, I went to a Roman Catholic school, so I was taught some pretty, you know, very vivid, you know, moral teachings, and that helped me as well. So, and yes, I think that, you know, these are the messages which we need to bring back very, very loud and clear these days, because music isn't just about making money or making a career. It actually has a very important social, you know, function. Bringing us together is one of them. You know, and uplifting and making people see a wider view of life and tasting different cultures as well, you know, all in the process. It's amazing. It's universal. That's what it is.
I'm interested in this very much because not all musicians, not all high-profile people, whether they are in cinema or in music or in another form of the arts, not all of them choose to get onto a social platform every now and then and say, this is what I believe and I think the world would be better if more people believed this. Do you think that artists have a duty, a responsibility to use their platform, the platform that their fame has given them, to try and improve the world? Or is that down to an individual choice that the artist can make?
Depends on how the capacity of the person, but, you know, if you look at the big movers, I mean, in my time, the Beatles, you know, well, they began as like a pop group, you know, well, a rock group, and then progressed to reach these incredible heights of musical, you know, innovation. But if you look at them, you know, you see what John Lennon was saying, you see what George Harrison was saying, and then you can see Dylan. There's so many, you know, that I think they use their position too to try and, you know, to shake the world up a little bit and try to, you know, rebuild those bridges where we can, you know, cross and meet each other and get together. And I think that if you look at Muhammad Ali, look at what kind of amazing, you know, changes he brought about just by his own personality. Sometimes a guy's got it, and maybe some don't have enough of that conviction. But, I mean, when you do see it, it really is important.
I've read the book, Why I Still Carry a Guitar, which was absolutely wonderful to find out so much more about your early life and your upbringing, living in the West End above the restaurant that your family owned and ran, and the eclectic mix of musical influences that you were, that that you had access to. But for those of your fans who don't know too much about your entry into music, just talk a little bit about how it was that you grew to love music and want to be a musician.
Yeah, well, first I wanted to be an artist because I could kind of paint at a very early age. Then, you know, I was living in the West End, so there you have all these theatres, all these, you know, clubs, nightclubs, everything else. But the theatres had all these musicals going on, so I grew up on musicals like West Side Story. Well, King Kong, I've got to say, it was one of the big musicals in my life. And it came over in 1969. And that's, you know, that was amazing. And that influenced me, all these musicals. And then you got the Beatles coming along. And, you know, that just changed everything because it meant that you could, with a guitar, just you could really get on the road and make a mark, you know, sort of. It was much quicker, faster track than painting. And so that's what I did, and I started writing my own songs. I couldn't really sing too many other people's songs. It was too difficult to remember the words and learn the chords, so I made up my own. And, you know, one of the first songs I wrote was kind of First Cut Is the Deepest. Wow. You know, it meant I was on the right track. So that's how it began.
Is it true that you sold the rights to that song for £30, which I've read somewhere?
That's a kind of no, it's a little bit of a myth. I used to I used to sign an agreement with my publisher for the songs for £30 advance, but that was it. You know, I still expected the royalties.
Ah, good. You mentioned King Kong, and next week a new production of King Kong opens here in South Africa, and I think it might still be on while you're touring, so you can go and have a look at it almost 50 years later from when you saw the original production in the West End. I think it's very well known about your leaving the music scene, your conversion to Islam, selling the guitars and all that sort of thing. You didn't completely abandon music over the period between then and 2006 when you came back into it with a new album. I mean, you did come to South Africa and perform with Peter Gabriel for the Nelson Mandela 4664 concert. But what was it that made you decide, you know what, I'm going to get back into music, if not full time, a lot more than I have been involved the last 30 odd years?
Well, I think it was, you know, I did write a few songs, you know, when I was, you know, when I began a family, then I had children, of course, and my children are looking, and they wanted little songs to sing, you know, so I wrote them a song. My first song that I wrote was called A is for Allah, and, you know, I thought, well, that's an obvious title, nobody's thought of that before, I can't believe it. So I wrote it, and and then I started writing these songs for children, and then came, you know, the Bosnian War, I think, was a big turning point, because when there was this genocide going on in Europe, I couldn't believe that the world was just doing nothing about it, you know, just watching. So we went over there, and when we went there, we heard these songs, and these people, they had nothing. They had no arms, no food, you know, they had no shelter, and yet they were singing. And that just, wow, that hit me. And so I found that there was some kind of resonance of how important a song becomes, you know, to people when they've got nothing else. Sometimes maybe you don't have a religion, maybe you don't have you don't understand what life is about, but a song sometimes can take you to a place where you start to understand life a bit better, or you feel more comfortable, and that's very important. So I think art has a great place to play in sort of educating as well as making people, you know, feel that rush of love and happiness again. And it's not all happy songs. I mean, you know, there are sad songs too, but that's what life is, you know, it's, and music expresses that. So anyway, when I came back to writing again, it was really to try and create bridges, because, you know, the world was looking so fractured, and you know, there was you were facing this end of the world scenario, you know, it was really looking bad. So I said, well, this is the time to sing Peace Train again. And one of the first times I sang it, I've got to say this, the first times I sang it was in Joburg, actually. It was in South Africa. And I was there to do a children's album. And then, you know, these voices, this choir we had, Inkwenga Choir, I said, well, let's try this song, you know. So I did, like, Peace Train, and it sounded so fantastic. I said, wow. And I think that got me on the road as well. So there's part of the history of my, you know, return to music is in South Africa.
Mm. A song like He Was Alone, you mentioned there Bosnia. This genocide was going on and nobody seemed really to care very much. And He Was Alone is about a similar situation. What's been happening in Syria? Yes, the global superpowers are involved. America and Russia are on different sides of that. But what's happening in Libya as well? The literally millions of people who are trying to escape that terrible conflict and find a better home for themselves and drowning in the sea, trying to head towards Italy and so on. Do you think a song like He Was Alone, which highlights that and says, you know, people, look, this is happening on your watch, do you think it makes a difference?
For some, it does. For others, you know, they bypass it as they would, you know, a page or, you know, an advertisement in the paper. They don't care about it. They just don't look. But for those who are, you know, for those who have hearts and have minds, you know, to realize what it's like themselves, you know, to be alone, not to have someone there. I mean, maybe a lot of people have never experienced it, but there are a lot of people who are experiencing that. So reaching out, I just felt a little bit guilty not doing anything, you know, so that's why I wrote that song and I did that concert in London to raise awareness. And, of course, it hasn't stopped. It hasn't finished. So, you know, what we're doing now, we're trying to use, well, we give charity, obviously, but the problem is so big politically. As you say, with, you know, USA on one side and Russia on the other, and the Muslim world or the Middle East in the middle, it really is a very difficult time. But that doesn't stop us from, you know, from doing what we can.
Back to the music. We're very, very, very excited about your coming to South Africa on this tour. Inevitably, it's going to be a mix of old songs and new songs.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I like singing the old songs and, you know, what old songs? I mean, they're really, they're kind of everlasting, really. I think some of them, the themes are, you know, they're to do with the human relations, with father and son, you know, wild world. Even First Cut is the deepest, to do with, you know, your first love. And there are all these stories as well that go along with them. I mean, I wrote a song once called The Boy with the Moon and Star on His Head. So, you know, some of these songs even predicted the future in some respect. It was amazing. So some of those songs definitely, well, a lot of them will be in the show.
That, Cat Stevens, Yusuf Islam, I really enjoyed that conversation. He is in Cape Town at the start of his tour on the 9th of November at Grand West. Tickets go on sale on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock.